As Hindu mythology says, this is from Ankur Mehrotra. Is it here? Good, very good question. As Hindu mythology says, Draupadi was the main cause of the great war of Mahabharata. Why she has been called ideal woman when she has been the cause of war? Does an ideal woman seek vengeance? A very, very interesting, very important question. Certainly regarded will be a wrong movement of human nature. Badla lena.
This has been one of the
main trends of modern thought today. There is an ethical doctrine. If somebody slaps you on the left cheek, you give the right cheek. It's a very great teaching. In India, we have said that to reach an ideal, you have to pass through many stages. What is good for child may not be good for the adults. What is good for tamasic man is not good for rajasic man. What is good for rajasic man is not good for the sattvic man. What is good for sattvic man is not good for the spiritual man. If you don't make this kind of distinction, wrong judgments will come up. Take for example, in Indian ethics, for good taste, he is not regarded to be a great virtue in Indian life. You should eat for the sake of nourishment and not for the sake of taste. But supposing you have a child who does not eat at all, does not like anything that you prepare, then you prepare something which the child will like from the point of the taste. What is better, to allow the child to starve or to give to the child a food which the child appreciates and likes? If you tell the child now that look, don't eat for the sake of taste, only for the nourishment. Ethics is a ladder. You rise from lower level to the higher levels. Many people believe that ethics has no ladder. One general principle applies to everybody. You should not therefore all on the same plane. There is a question of violence and non-violence. It's a very big question today in India. For the last 100 years, there has been great controversy on violence and non-violence. According to one's idea, you should be all non-violent. According to another idea, if you have to use violence for a great ideal to be realized, then that violence is justified. This is the argument which has bewildered Indian mind for the last 100 years. Bhagat Singh, for example, recently you have seen some films on Bhagat Singh. He did not care for non-violence. He cared for India. He cared for freedom of India. And he believed that the Britishers who were sucking the blood of India should be thrown out of India.
They must be killed.
And he suffered a tremendous privation in his life, ultimately, was he wrong? Was he right? Did he have the sense of vengeance? Should he have had the sense of vengeance? Do we praise him for the sake of his vengeance? No. Human nature is a mixture of many emotions. And we have to judge an individual first on the whole, totality of the man, his highest aspiration. An ascetic might say, even eating food is not right. But we don't apply the same rule to everybody, saying, don't eat any food at all. It will be wrong. When you judge Draupadi, you are not judging her vengeance. Actually, at that time, vengeance was regarded as a right motive of action. The question is, was she motivated only by vengeance? What was the overall attitude of Draupadi? Was it only vengeance for which she was fighting? Is it because she was insulted, therefore she was fighting? If that was the only reason, your judgment can be of a very low order for her. If that was the only reason. Was she free from vengeance? No. But the question was any one of her times free from vengeance? Anyone? Excepting Krishna or Bhishma, perhaps. Was there anybody who was free from vengeance at that time? She shared the idea of vengeance of the time with everyone. But it was not vengeance which was the cause that she was fighting for. She was fighting for a cause in which justice was denied. And justice was denied by whom? By people who were themselves consumed by the fire of vengeance. They were fired by anger. They were fired by injustice. Petty desires. It was under the leadership of a man who did not care for womanhood and wanted to humiliate womanhood in the presence of the biggest people of his country at that time. It was not vengeance. It was a tremendous sense. You see her demeanor when she comes to the court, when she is dragged by Dushasana. The quietude, the forbearance, the bravery with which she stands alone. Her husbands have all fallen. Those who are ready to pounce upon her, they are in supremacy. It is at that moment, if Draupadi is praised, it's not because of a sense of vengeance. She stood alone at that time. And she had the presence of mind to ask some of the deepest questions of ethics, which even Vishwapitama could not answer. Vishwapitama was one of the greatest at that time in the field of ethics, Nityashastra. He could not answer the question of Draupadi. It is this character, not a vengeance, she was not a woman of vengeance at that time. She was only challenging everyone in the court. And imagine the power of her character must have been so great that even Dhritarashtra, the blind man, who could not even see, he was shaken. And Dhritarashtra was forced to ask for forgiveness from Draupadi. And even to offer boons after boons. Whatever she would ask, he would give. Was there any vengeance in it? She won the battle at that time. Mahabharata was won at that moment. When Dhritarashtra bowed to her and said, "You ask for anything." And imagine her answer. She could have asked for everything at that time. Even the kingdom of Dhritarashtra she could have asked. She would have said, "You please get down from your seat. Get my husband's seat on it." She doesn't ask for that. She only says, "Give my husband's back," and that is all. If my husbands are with me, everything is with me. Was it vengeance? Not at all. So when we say it was for vengeance in Mahabharata war was fought, no. True vengeance was present, but it was present among all the people. That is not the yardstick by which you are going to judge her. If we judge a person, we must know how to judge a person. What is common at a given time, you should not pounce upon that. Even Krishna, for example, says to Arjuna, "Slay your enemies." Today, inspired by our idea of non-violence, we can say Krishna was very wrong. He asked for slaughter. He should have taught non-violence at that time. But that was not the rule of the time. You should see what is Yuga Dharma. Yuga Dharma is the law of life which is appropriate to the age in which you are living. It is that Yuga Dharma in which battle and a sanguinary battle was the only means of securing justice. The only method. Today you are even the international court, you have got United Nations organization. You could appeal to them. At that time there was no such court at all. So where the means of justice are not available of the kind that are available today, and you apply the standards of today to that age, it will be quite wrong, inapplicable. As I said, what you demand from an adult, you don't demand from a child. It will be wrong. For every stage of development, in India we say that there are four aims of life. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. At the lowest level, work for Kama. At a higher level, work for Artha. At a higher level, work for Dharma. At a still higher level, work for Moksha. You cannot apply the law of Moksha to a boy who is just born and say, "Now you start Moksha." It would be wrong idea, inapplicable. It only means that you do not know what life is and how life is to be guided. This is the superiority of Indian ethics. Indian ethics says, do not apply the same rule to everybody. Depending upon the age, depending upon the stage of development, there are laws for every stage. And follow the laws of that stage and judge. Draupadi has to be recognized as a leader of women. The way in which she vindicated the cause of woman, she stood before all the men who looked like impotent, even though wise, and who could not answer her questions. And she threatened the whole kingdom only by her speech and made everybody silent against the criticism that she leveled against everyone who was present in the court. and on the basis of truth and justice. She had the presence of mind at that time that if you are absolutely helpless, there is only one force that can save you, the divine grace. She prayed to Sri Krishna at the right time and believed in miracle or no miracle. But her shame was saved by whatever happened at that moment. And she knew how to get that particular help in the time of distress. One who has presence of mind to ask those questions, one who has got that humility to demand that kind of help, which alone can save you in the condition of utter helplessness. This is Draupadi. And that is why she won Hamesha Achhe Logo Jaise Rani Lakshmi Bai Ki Hi Pariksha Leta Hai. Aur Jo Dushkarm Karte Hain Unki Pariksha Kyon Nahi Leta Jisse Log Bure Path Par Na Chal Pade. Why God tests only the good people? Why does He not test the evil people? You know, in my own life, I have asked this question very often. And therefore, I like this question very much. And the conclusion I have reached is the following. God knows very well if you are good. Knows very well if you are not good. He does not need to test you at all. He knows who is good. It's not to find out whether a person is good or not. He's not like an examiner who doesn't know the pupil. The very starting point is, according to me, not correct. God does not need to test, and God never tests. This is my conclusion. God never tests. He knows already that you are good. You don't need to be proved. If He needs a test, it means He is not God. He is not omniscient. He does not know you. It's an indictment of God. If God tests you, it means that really God is not God. He doesn't know you. He needs some kind of testing. He wants to put a torch on you because He Himself has no light. So this is my first condition. God does not need to test anybody, and God does not test anybody. God always helps. He is your helper. Knowing well what you are, He is your helper. But there is a kind of testing in the world. There is testing. Who is testing? There are three kinds of people who test you. Those who want your help, but they do not know that you can help. They test you. Secondly, those who want to claim, but who do not know how to establish their claim. I say I'm qualified engineer. It's my claim. But I don't know how to prove it.
Then,
Mandakini, she's an engineer, and she asks me questions and I submit myself to the testing. So when there are claims made, but the claims are not capable of being.
So,
those who want to torture you because they don't like you, they put you into a test.
Will that be all the three?
Any one of the three can be. No, there are teachers who torture children by testing. I know myself. Some teachers do test only for the sake of protecting children. That is a very, very wrong thing to do, but that happens. So, it is not true to say that God tests, you know. There are tests in the world, but the tests are limited to these three stages. If you don't want to be tested, then you should go straight to God. He will not test you. If you really do not want to be tested at all, you just go to God and God alone. But we should accept tests. Because we need to grow. We want to develop. Therefore, we should accept any test that comes in the world from all these three sources. And if you can stand these three tests in life, you'll be free from the tangles of tests in life. You have to cross this big river of destiny. You become worthy afterwards to approach God who never tests. He releases you from all the tangles. He takes you in his embrace, raises you, gives you strength where strength is not there. As it is said by Kalidasa, Pangum Rangayate Girim. If you are late, he makes you cross the big mountain. That is the power of God. He doesn't test you. If you are late and go to him, he will come with you and will take you over a great mountain. God is nothing but grace. But we do not know how to reach him. Therefore, we need this test in our life. So if you are tested, remember that you have become subjected to any one of these three forces in the world. And cross over. This is my answer to your question. Why God tests? God does not miss. Why only good people are tested? Because they very often claim that they are good. No, not only that, it is true. I mean, law is for law abiding, that is true. They are claiming that we are law abiding, therefore, there is a test. But there is a deeper answer to this question. The deeper question, the answer is that in the creation of the world, he will occupy the world first. You know, there is a story in the Veda that first there was only light. And Vishali also says the first there was light, God said light and light was there. Then Veda says, then came the evil. Ratra. Tato Ratra Jayata. Then came the night. Then came the gods. So demons came first and occupied the earth. Then came the gods. And gods were told, now you fight the demons. So when they start any kind of fight, demons are already there seated. So they are attacked immediately by the evil forces. All the good doers are latecomers. And therefore they are under attack. The whole battle of life is to overtake those who come earlier and occupy the earth. You see, everywhere in the world you will find, wherever there is evil, is already in occupation. It's a law of life, you will see everywhere. Good people always come little late. They are latecomers. If you are good, it means that you have come late. And therefore, they are constantly in the brink of battle. This is really true, actually. It may be a joke, but it's a fact. This earth is occupied already by the evil forces. We come here now to occupy that land which belongs. You see the landlordism. All landlords, at one time, landlords were regarded to be very cruel masters. The whole history of mankind, you will see, landlords were cursed. And then they began to rule. And the poor, exploited people like us came later on. And we had no power over the land. It is the masters who have the power over the land. And then we had to fight and struggle against them. But that is what we are. Therefore, we should not be despondent. We have one great power in us. The evil forces may be the first comers. We may be late comers. But satyameva jayate. This is the promise given. If you stand for the truth, you will regain. That is a promise given to you. Therefore, we should continue our battle in life. Whether we are tested, not tested, we are allowed, not allowed. Now, there is another question here, very nice question. Pardon? Any question? Yes?
So, why would God have Harishchandra tested?
Now, that is a very interesting question, in fact. Why Raja Harishchandra was tested? By whom was he tested? By Vishwamitra, it is said, and by Indra. You know, our stories in the Mahabharata, in the Ramayana, in the mythologies, they have to be read with a great care. Who are gods? Who are the rishis? And what is the stage of a rishi's development? Today we regard all gods, all rishis in one plane. And we think they were the highest and the best. That is not true. There are gods in the Veda, described in the Veda. There are gods described in the Upanishads. There are gods described in the Puranas. And you will see, there is no uniformity in the description of these gods. We don't ask this question, but we should ask this question. It's a very important question. Why do we not find the kind of gods described in the Veda, the same in the Upanishads, or the same in the Puranas? Why? Anasuya, a beautiful woman, devoted to her husband. The three gods come and they want that she should serve the food without any garment on her body. And he said, these three gods came. Is it really the gods that are described in the Vedas? There are gods and gods according to Indian thought. Take for example the gods of the Keno Upanishad. I don't know if you read the gods in the Keno Upanishad. There's a short story in the Keno Upanishad. What is that story? It's a story of three gods, Indra, Vayu, and Agni. These three gods had become conquerors. They had conquered. They had won the battle against the Asuras. And they were celebrating the battle and the victory. Suddenly they find an apparition. Somebody comes and throws a straw on the ground and says, you gods, such victorious gods, burn this straw. You are very victorious, powerful, no? Burn this straw. Shake this straw. Tell me, what is his stroke? Agni comes up and says, well, I will know, because nothing in the world is born without my knowledge. I am Jataveda. Veda means the knower, Jata means one is born. Anything that is born on the earth, I am Jataveda. I know what it must be, this thing. He rushes over the straw and he finds that he cannot burn it. He does not even know that straw. He comes back and says, my Lord, this is something which I cannot answer. Remember the God saying, I do not know and I cannot even touch it. I cannot even know what it is. Then Vayu comes and says, yes, I can throw out anything in the world with hurricane power. He can't move that straw. Comes forward. He comes defeated back again. Then Indra comes forward. I too cannot know it. I cannot know. Indra, the knower of knowers, is supposed to know everything. The lord of all the gods. And he says, I cannot know. Evidently, these three gods are not the gods described in the Veda. These three gods do not know that apparition which comes. The gods of the Veda, they know the Supreme Lord very well. This is the description of the Veda, Vedic gods. But here in the Upanishad, these three gods do not know. They fail. Who are these gods? It is afterwards that Indra is in search. Ultimately finds that the apparition that came was the apparition of the Supreme Lord. And he comes to know only through the help of Uma Hemavati. There is a woman. He came across the woman, Uma Hemavati. And she tells Indra, this is the Supreme Lord. You think that you have won the battle because of your power? It is not true. If you have won the battle, it is won because of the power of the Supreme Lord behind you. This is the knowledge that they can open the gates. Surely, these are not the gods, all-knowing gods. These are not the gods who are humble. They are proud. Who do not know the Supreme Reality behind them. Who need to be told. Who need to be told by a woman. Therefore, surely, these are not those gods who are worshipped in the Veda. In Puranas, you come to Puranas. Who are the rishis and the gods in the Puranas? Even in Greek mythology, you see, there also there is Zeus and Hera and Poseidon and so many other gods. They are not divine. Ordinary human beings. Zeus falls in love with a woman and then has children. What are these gods? In some respects, you might say they are lesser than the men. They are. The truth that is to be known is that even rishis and devas are at different stages. They are not all of the same level. The god at the highest level, when he descends at the lower plane, he assumes the deficiencies of the lower levels. And they even become asuras. They partake into that nature. So that is why if Harishchandra was tested, he was not tested by God. He was tested by Indra, who was at the lower level. He did not even know that Harishchandra was really truthful. He did not know. He wanted to test. He was competitor of Harishchandra. It was Vishwamitra who did not know what was Harishchandra. Therefore, we should not be misled by the words. Rishis and gods in our Indian mythology do not all represent the same level of consciousness. There are gods and gods. If you read Sri Aurobindo's great poem called Savitri, he speaks of the gods of the little world, or even little gods of the vital world, of the physical world. There are all kinds of forces in the world. And the world is peopled by various kinds of forces. And Indian mythology has to be understood at a very deep level. So I'm very happy you asked this question. Was Harishchandra destined by God? No. He was destined by Indra and Vishwamitra, who were themselves at the same level, even lower level than Harishchandra. So this is my answer to this question. I think now we are nearly getting to the last moments of our seminar at the morning. I have now a question by Ina Chakral. Ina Chakral. Yesterday also you were there, no? No? Then see. Oh, you only yesterday. It's a very good question. Garbhavati Sita ko Ram ne tyag diya tha. Phir bhi hum unhe maryada purushottam kyon kehte hain? Unki sirf praja ke prati zimmedari thi, apni patni ke prati nahi thi. It's a very important question, and this is a question to be asked again and again, and we have to understand this question in depth. It's a very good question, therefore I selected this question. How to answer this question? There are many starting points for this answer. The one answer is given by one of the films on Ramayana. There are many versions of Ramayana. According to one version, the whole idea of exile of Sita was interpolation. It never happened. Tulsidas does not give any importance to this event at all. It seemed he had no answer to this, and he thought that Rama could have never done it. In one of the versions that you have in the story of Ramayana, which is filmed in Ramayana, the recent version, Sita herself demanded that she should be exiled. Rama did not decide to exile her. This is the version that is being presented. Sita herself decided, and she requested Rama to exile her. Of course, Valmiki's Ramayana does not give this excuse at all. It's a very straightforward statement, which only says that there was Kim Vadanti, there was a kind of a rumor that only Rama could take Sita back, even when Sita was put into the palace of his enemy. Even an ordinary dhobi would not allow this kind of immodesty on the part of if it was done by his wife. Sri Rama heard this rumor. Now imagine Rama's condition. There is a criticism among the people. It is in the form of a rumor. Rama is not sure whether all the people believe it or not. So he convenes an assembly of the prominent citizens of his city, of his kingdom. And puts this question to them. Members of the assembly are extremely respectful of Rama, but they give no reply. Alright, now you put yourself in the place of Rama. It was not merely a rumor started from one ordinary man in the whole city. It was confirmed that a large number of people, even the best people of his kingdom, none of them was sure about Sita. He was sure. Once again, you ask yourself, if you were a king and you had this very important problem which collided with your personal problem as compared to the problem of the whole community, what is the method by which you will decide this question? Question had come before Edward VIII. We know the story. He wanted to marry a woman and the kingdom would not allow him to marry that woman. So he abdicated and George VI came to the throne and he withdrew from the kingdom. That was his decision. Was it a correct decision? Was it not a correct decision? We all believe it's a correct decision. He loved his wife so dearly and his loyalty to his wife was so great. He sacrificed the whole kingdom. And we feel very proud about it. And we should be, why not? There are conditions, there are situations in life where loyalty of your own personal relationships is much greater, has a greater value than your loyalty to the society. But is it always so? This is the question I'm asking. In every circumstance, is that the way by which you should decide the question? What is the best way of protecting my wife, of honoring my wife, when I know that my wife is totally dedicated to me, and that my love for him, for her, and her love for me requires no proof of any kind at all. I want to prove her that I am loyal to him, to her. I want to prove to her. It's already proved. I don't need to prove to you. Second question I have to ask is, what is it for which I am living? What is it for which he is living? There are stages of life where you have to weigh the importance of X object, Y object, C object. You have to ask yourself, what is the object for which you are living today at present? It depends upon your judgment. And any judgment that you give, really, heartily, truly, is according to me honorable. You could have said that, well, honoring my wife, abdication of my kingdom, I don't bother at all about it. Rama had already proved that already. He had already accepted. He had thrown away the kingdom. It was not as if he was greatly enamored of the kingdom. He had already shown in his life that he didn't care for it. He had even gone to his wife and said, don't join me because the life is difficult. I want to protect you. I want to be see that you are safe. It is she who insisted, no, I must come with you. And he accepted. Even though it was a difficult task for him, as he himself says, that my task in the forest will be difficult if you join me. Because I have to protect myself and yourself against the wild animals and against various kinds of problems which would arise in the forest. Even then he accepted when she said, I must be with you. She even chides him and says, I thought my father made a mistake. You are a Kapurusha who says to his wife, I cannot take care of you, therefore I will not take you with me. You are an important man. That's the bravery of the Sita. Who tells her husband, you are a Kapurusha. And Rama accepts her and accepts all the problems, including fighting with Ravana. If she was not present at that time, this Ratha would not have risen. Take calamity would not have come. We are therefore to see Rama's character as a whole. It was not as if he was greatly enamored of the kingdom, greatly tired of his wife, could not take the trouble to protect his wife, not at all. The question was, why he had become king? What was the reason of his accepting the king? Actually, Dwaraj had already become the king. He had given up the charge of Kikur already. Even when Bharat came to him and said, please accept the kingdom, he said, no, I don't accept the kingdom. But Bharat told him, without you, our kingdom will not achieve solidarity. There is a question of unity of the whole society. As a symbol of that solidarity, at least give your wooden sandals. I'll put them on the throne and I'll work as your prime minister, as your servant. He had therefore accepted the kingdom for that reason, for the solidarity of the society. As I said, at a given time, you should ask the question, what is of supreme importance? When two, three different alternatives present before you, and you can do only one thing and not all the three, then how will you choose? What is your best choice? As I said, was it to prove to his wife that I am very loyal to you? She knows it already. Not only that, he knows that under every circumstance she will be happy if anything comes from him. So that was not to establish it. If that was to be established, one could have argued about it. If I have to prove to my wife I am loyal to him, to her, there may be need sometimes. It is necessary. You can do it. But if that question is not on, but if there is a question that my society will collapse, for the sake of saving the society, I have to make a sacrifice. My wife has to make a sacrifice. I have to tell my wife, you make a sacrifice. A greater aim is to be achieved. It is for that reason, according to me, that Rama took a very powerful decision. Such a decision, he did not care for popularity of the present age. He knew he'll be criticized by people, by generations after generations. But what is a brave man if he does not accept unpopularity? He does not accept misunderstanding by the people. He had a great aim to be achieved. This is how he decided. Could he not combine both of them together? Keeping the wife also in the home, and society also being very happy. He tries. He called the people. They did not respond. He tried to keep both the things together. In that condition, he had to take a very grave decision. Great decision.
ये जो सवाल आया है द्रौपदी सीता को राम विद्या दिया फिर भी उनको पुरुषोत्तम क्यों कहते हैं इस प्रश्न को हम उल्टा करना काम ने सीता को नहीं त्यागा तब आप उन्हें क्या कहते हैं क्यों तब ये बात चली आती इस तरह की परंपरा होती कि he loved so much that he ignored the royal duties responsibilities of running the kingdom तब ये हो जाती और जिसे आपने मर्यादा की पूरा नहीं करता हूँ ये मर्यादा पुरुषोत्तम ये प्रश्न चिन्ह उनके मर्यादा पुरुषोत्तम पर लग गया था अगर ऐसा न हुआ होता और वैसा हो गया होता जैसा आप प्रश्न कर रहे तब क्या होता तो निश्चित रूप से ये बात होती है कि सारा राज्य एक तरफ पत्नी का प्रेम एक तरफ चाहे बदली कुछ भी आप जानते लेकिन बाकी नहीं जानते, तो दूसरी एक क्रिटिसिज्म शुरू होती है जिसमें ये आलोचना निहित है कि आप जिसको इतना बड़ा माना गया उसके बावजूद भी बाकी सबको उसने कर दिया। जबकि वस्तुतः उद्देश्य था राज्य में सुचारू व्यवस्था की, एक नैतिक मापदंड की स्थापना की। तीसरी एक और बात जिसे हम आज आलोचनात्मक मान रहे, क्रिटिकल मान रहे हैं, क्या वो उस समय उस रूप में था? सबको ये लग रहा है उस समय राम का ये त्याग वस्तुतः उसी रूप में समझा गया था जिस रूप में आज हम आलोचना कर रहे हैं। ये देखिए कि जो राजा अपनी पत्नी को राक्षसों से लड़ करके सारा जितने सारे 14 वर्ष के जो वनवास को उनके दुख को भोग करके रावण से जीत कर लाए, उसके लिए भी उस पत्नी के लिए भी से भी बढ़कर राज्य और प्रजा की व्यवस्था उनकी माने दक्षिण व्यवस्था उस आदमी के मन में है, तो इससे राम का जो दायित्व बढ़ा, राम का जो कद बढ़ा, उसकी स्वीकृति भाव बढ़ी, वही उस देश का होता। अगर वो उसको रोक लेते तो हो सकता दो लोग भी वर्क करते ये नहीं होते, लेकिन पीछे आने वाले लोगों के लिए यही एक अच्छा या उदाहरण हो जाता कि कुल मिलाकर चाहे कितनी बड़ी बात है किसी आदमी के बारे में कर ले, कुल मिला के लेते के पत्नी और संतान सब आकर के उससे भी ले जाता है, उसके बाद सेक्रीफाइस कर लिया, तो मैं तो उल्टा कहना चाहता हूँ। इसका प्रश्न है, बच्ची का प्रश्न है, मीना झगड़ा की मर्यादा पुरुषोत्तम राम मर्यादा पुरुषोत्तम ने ही इसलिए कि उन्होंने इस तरह की स्थिति में भी पत्नी को त्यागना उचित समझा, और ये त्यागना जिसे कहा जा रहा है वो त्यागना है भी नहीं, वस्तुतः जब दो व्यक्ति आपस में समझते हैं उनकी गहराई अपने आप में है तो इसका कहा रहना किसका गहराई आपके लिए तो लगता है बड़ी बात सुनकर त्याग दिया, उन लोगों के लिए इसके लिए कोई स्थिति जो आप ये तो आपस का है, मेरी शिकायत आपके प्रति न हो आपकी शिकायत मेरे प्रति नहीं हो, लेकिन तीसरा आदमी जो देख रहा है वो सुनिए मेरे बड़ा कोई बात नहीं शिकायत ही नहीं, तो ये परेशानी तो उस सामान्य व्यक्ति की है जो उस तरह दो कैरेक्टर से गहराई में उतरे हुए हैं, उनको एक दूसरे के प्रति कोई गलतफहमी नहीं है, तो प्रश्न ही उठा। मैं मजाक में कहना चाहूंगा, एक व्यक्ति ने अपने घर पे फोन किया और ये कहा कि चार लोगों को मैं लेकर के लंच पर आ रहा हूँ, और फोन से जवाब आया कि हाँ आ जाइए, उसने फोन रख दिया और अपने दोस्त को कहा कि ये रॉन्ग नंबर से फोन मिल गया, मेरी पत्नी को कभी ऐसा स्वीकार कर नहीं सकती इतने चार लोगों को लेकर खाने पर आ जाऊं और झिटकियां ना मिले। ये अंडरस्टैंडिंग नेगेटिव रूप में भी होती है, पॉजिटिव रूप में भी होती है। आप इन बात को समझिए कि निश्चित रूप से त्याग जिसे आप कह रहे हैं वो आपके लिए त्याग है, इनके लिए एक दायित्व का निर्वाह, एक कैरिंग आउट द रिस्पॉन्सिबल रोल बहुत सी मान रखती है, एंड इट वॉज फुलफिल्ड बाय राम, दैट्स व्हाई वी कॉल हिम मर्यादा पुरुषोत्तम। थैंक यू।
So I repeat some of the seminar of everybody now. But otherwise, we can make it by a hand. This is like the assembly of our people. Nobody's answering. Therefore, now we accept. All right. Nobody's answering the question. That is the knowledge. All right.
Yes, so finally, thank you so much. And I know that I have not answered many, many questions. Then most of the questions we may not answer. But I must congratulate you for that.
So, congratulations.
And maybe that perhaps I pass on this question to your principal. You kindly advertise these questions to everybody so that the questions and these are shared by everybody. Very important questions have been asked. People should share this question. And maybe that some session should be held where you can answer these questions. Pardon.
We need to kill.
Not देखा। What is happening? आमने सामने जो होता है, वो देख से नहीं होता है। ठीक है। Thank you so much.
You were saying here from your
video.
No, yeah. Actually, when I was talking, I was saying most of the time,
it is from the pressure. I
don't know.
Dear young friends, you have heard so many discussions, deliberations, questions and answers, explanations and all. Now, I invite any one of you to comment upon the whole thing which has taken place here. In your opinion, what was the thing which was imparted to you, or how do you rate this whole thing? Is it a commendable exercise for future, for other your colleagues or something? What is your reaction about this event? Any one of you, in Hindi or English, whatever you feel better, you can come. Then honest evaluation of the whole thing, of the whole activity, which took place here. In what way you are, say, impressed, or in what way you react it, in what way you rate it, that is the question. You simply come, anyone may come, voluntarily, I won't call anyone, but anyone may come and say, share his feelings. Thank you.